welcome to episode 9 of Strong Style History here on the Pro Wrestling Only Board in Place to Be Nation. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. We run a regular blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, and as I already mentioned, you are listening to this through Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. With me today is my co-host, Lawrence O'Brien. Lawrence, how are you?
I'm great. I just got back from Chili's. I had way too much food for my own good, and I'm ready to podcast.
Well, as long as you're ready.
I got gifts, early birthday gifts, so I'm psyched, bro.
Okay, right on. And we have a special guest with us here today that will dovetail into our topic. We have Brett, also known as Bahu FMW. He is the godhead of all knowledge relating to Atsushi Onita, Hayabusa, and FMW on the internet. Brett, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be here.
Our topic today, well, it's one of the more interesting ones we're going to cover here on Strong Style History. As on Tuesday, October the 31st, either will have or already has, depending on when you're listening to this, Atsushi Onita, at the tender age of 60, will be retiring for what he claims is the final time. No, really, seriously, we mean it this time.
The Mick Jagger of the wrestling world, truly, Atsushi Onita.
Onita's final match will be a 6-man tag match, a street fight in Tokyo Korakuen Hall, where he will team with Dragon Gate's Shingo Takagi and freelance wrestler Kai against a team consisting of Kazuyuki Fujita and who else, Brett?
Nosawa Rongai. Crap, I'm forgetting who the other guy is now off the top of my head.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah. I guess it must be pretty indie sleaze then.
I know that Shingo was a kind of a late minute addition to this.
Yeah, they changed it to Shingo for attendance purposes and everything to kind of get more of a buzz going because the tickets are so high priced and everything. But it's, yeah, okay, Kendo Kishin, that's who it was.
Kendo Kishin.
Oh, okay. Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
My favorite Kendo Kishin.
Anyway, boy. You may be wondering to yourself, why the hell are we talking about Atsushi Onita on a New Japan podcast? Well, because you may not realize that Atsushi Onita took part in 5 matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling from 1999 to 2000, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. The roots of this all started with the retirement of Riki Choshu, who is one of the top names historically for New Japan, as well as the erstwhile booker for quite some time. After his retirement, Atsushi Onita started calling him out, daring him to come out of retirement. And this is where I'm going to be relying on Brett a little bit, because unfortunately, despite the internet, information about this seems to be a little few and far between. So, Brett, as you were around at the time, as was I, my memory cheats me a little bit. What do you recall about this time period?
So, around this time period, Onita had been pretty much kicked out of FMW. You know, the promotion he created and everything, you know, he retired, sold the company off to Shoshi Arai. After about a year and a half later, decided, I'm coming back, and I want to be the top guy. Well, in that time period, they'd already focused on Hayabusa and kind of gotten away from that style, but since Onita, you know, had created the company, you know, they let him back in, obviously, even though it upset a lot of people because, hey, we just did a year-long retirement tour for you just to come back a year and a half later. So there was this awkward time period where, you know, some cards Hayabusa's on top, sometimes Onita's on top. Onita, you know, just he wants to be the main guy like it always has been. And so after about a year and a half of just the kind of this awkwardness of who's the really top guy, and Onita kind of being the jerk to all the guys and kind of going, I'm the main guy, you know, shut up, I'm the boss, you know, type attitude. All the FMW wrestlers got together and at the FMW office and told Onita, you're gone. We don't want you anymore. And so pretty much,
wow.
Onita. Yeah, so.
Whoa. Oh,
so,
boy.
And it was kind of awkward because it was Onita's office at the time. So, Onita stayed in, like, the, like, kind of the opening, you know, when you walk into a building or whatnot, like, kind of like the, where the secretary would be and stuff. Onita just sitting there for, like, an hour or two after they just told him to leave. So, it was just kind of all this awkwardness and everything. So, anyway, so. Onita leaves, you know, finally leaves FMW and whatnot, and he goes, well, I'm going to start my own company, and I'm going to kind of make some money elsewhere, and there's all these dream matches with New Japan. So he ends up making a deal with New Japan to, you know, and he wanted a match with Riki Choshu always, you know, again, he just wants all these dream matches to make a lot of money off and everything. And so, but Choshu's retired at the time. So in the meantime, he's going to kind of go after Choshu's protege. And at the beginning, it's Kinsuke Sasaki. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it kind of starts off with Onita running to the ring at a New Japan show, popping up and challenging Choshu, and then Kinsuke Sasaki coming to the ring and attacking Onita to set up the first Onita match at the Tokyo Dome.
Now, before we go to that, now, both Onita and Choshu, of course, had roots in All Japan Pro Wrestling, as Atsushi Onita was at one time the junior eight, the junior ace over in All Japan, and I believe Choshu was there around that time as well, wasn't he? Not was he not?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think they really interacted too much though, or anything like that. If they were, but you know, I mean, by this time though, Choshu was just such a big star, and Onita's such a big star, and that was the thing. Onita just wants big star matches and everything like that. There wasn't a like a past of like, oh, 15 years ago, which Onita has done plenty of times of, oh, I have a past with this guy, but there wasn't really a past with Choshu. It was just, I want this match. I want this, you know, I want this, you know, this gate. I want, you know, people, you know, this attention and everything to come with Choshu.
Right, right. And I can see that. So in any event, so the match was set up at Wrestling World 1999 on January the 4th, 1999 at the Tokyo Dome. It was that year's January 4th Tokyo Dome show. This is also a show where we are also, myself and Lawrence, already discussed a match from this show at length during, I believe it was episode 7, where we discussed the feud between Naoya Ogawa and Shinya Hashimoto. Happened at this show as well. But in this case, we had there were no gimmicks. This was just a regular wrestling match between Kensuke Sasaki and Atsushi Onita. Special referee for this match, Kotetsu Yamamoto, who by this time was, you know, helping out in the, you know, was a dojo trainer, was a, you know, a legendary New Japan wrestler in his own right. Yeah, we could talk about this match. Lawrence, did you get a chance to rewatch this?
I did watch this. I watched them all last night.
And
I definitely wanted to. Oh boy, yeah, this was a disaster.
This match was no good, folks.
Oh my good lord. I mean, it's like you just throw Onita in there basically and like try to have him wrestle with Sasaki, and Sasaki doesn't want to sell. Nobody wants to sell anything. I mean,
Sasaki stiffs the fuck out of Onita like for most of this match, and completely no sells him at the same time. Now it has to be said. It has to be said. I'm sure you recall from this at the time that myself and a lot of people hated Kensuke Sasaki with the fury of a thousand suns around this time period, pretty much for shit like this.
Yeah, he was not a good worker by any means, and he was very disliked by the internet and whatnot. It took him pretty much having like a match of the year with Kenta Kobashi to kind of be accepted about 5 or 6 years later.
Right, and this match was just no good. And we even get, you know, during a sequence where they're outside of the ring, number one, somebody threw a chair at Onita while he's setting up a pile driver through the vaunted Japanese tables.
Oh, you know, that's right.
That everybody makes a big deal about. Well, this one actually seemed to break or collapse or whatnot, and then Sasaki no-sells the pile driver anyway.
Oh yeah, like he got right up from it. It was horrible. Like it was just such a mess. They had like that one part too, like where he like literally had him on Onita on the ramp and was just like dragging him on the ramp for what felt like an hour, even though like the match was like 7 minutes long. Like that one section just felt like he was just dragging him on the ramp for like a million years. It was just so bad.
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to unmute my mic. So Brett, did you see this match at the, you know, when it was current, quote unquote, as current as we could get in the late 90s, you know, through trading?
Yeah, I got it pretty soon, I remember. So it was probably about a month or so later I got the tape of it. But yeah, it was not, in, you know, obviously in grainy videotape quality at the time. But yeah, it was pretty much, it was a horrible spectacle, but a lot of politics involved in this match. Onita was originally supposed to go over to kind of build up his run in New Japan, and Kinsuke simply refused to do it. He didn't want to lose to a guy that was, you know, known for death matches, when Kinsuke felt like, hey, I'm been former IWGP champion. I, you know, on, you know, this real legit, you know, wrestling style, I'm not going to lose to this guy.
Yeah, you know, and Choshu didn't want that either.
Yeah. and him being Choshu's boy too, you know, didn't help, you know, didn't hurt his cause. But yeah. It should be
so let's do the fireball instead.
Yeah, so it came from a DQ came, I guess, Onita with a fireball spot, and you know, following that, all hell broke loose. Onita cuts a promo, you know, afterwards in the Tokyo Dome while he's bleeding from the mouth, which this will be a recurring theme with these matches. And you know, of course, so as Onita's trying to leave, Sasaki just attacks him on the ramp. And that's where the NJPW world version ends, I think. We actually sourced these matches from a few different places, because it should be noted that all five of the matches that we're going to discuss today are, in fact, on NJPW world. However, due to copyright concerns, the entrances are cut out from all these matches. And, well, in at least one or two cases, the entrances are pretty... Are pretty important to these matches. So.
Yeah, because they're the only good thing about them, yeah. For the most part.
Well.
I mean, no offense. I mean, to Onita or anything, you know. And it's just like they were. It was not like particularly fun. Fun watching. It was, but it wasn't.
Well, we may be disagreeing on a couple of parts, but in any event, I mean, one thing we can all agree on: this match was just no good at all, and. For this being the beginning of the feud, that, you know, of the run for Onita, this just did not come off well.
Yeah, there's an interesting tidbit though. Hayabusa was actually in the crowd during the show. And,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, and so when Onita was getting destroyed by Sasaki and everything, there were people in the crowd going, "Go help Onita! Are you going to go help Onita?" And I was like, "Nope."
He's like, I don't give a crap about him.
Yeah, we just kicked his ass out. What are you talking about? Oh my goodness. And yeah, and of course, you know, this match did get overshadowed by the fact that there was also, you know, the infamous shoot between Naoya Ogawa and Shinya Hashimoto on the same show. So all in all, Wrestling World 1999, pretty interesting. I don't know if it was good, but it was interesting.
I think that describes New Japan in 1999 pretty well right there.
Yeah, there were some good things, but there was a lot of, it was more interesting than perhaps good, we could say. So this dovetailed into, so Onita finally manages to get his style of match brought into New Japan in the form of a no-rope explosive barbed wire death match, which would take place at NJPW Strong Style Symphony New Japan Spirit 1999, also at the Tokyo Dome, on April the 10th of 1999. This one would be Atsushi Onita taking on the leader of Team 2000, Masahiro Chono. Now, I have to confess, I don't recall the build-up to this match at all. Like, I don't know how Chono got to be the guy, other than you said that Onita wanted these big matches, and, well, Chono was definitely one of the big guys at the time in New Japan.
Yeah, he had came out afterwards, I think like a month after, like in February or so, and then challenged Chono. I mean, there wasn't really too much to it. He, you know, there's a brawl and whatnot, but there wasn't anything special about, you know, or different about this than, you know, even like the Sasaki thing. It was literally just, okay, let's build up to the next Tokyo Dome show. And then he, you know, he challenged and everything. And this match was a little better. And Chono was more willing to do things with Onita. You know, there wasn't this hate. I mean, Sasaki hated Onita. And that was the issue there, where they're just, you know, I'm not selling for this guy. I have no respect for this guy. Chono had respect for Onita. You know, the politics and everything. Obviously, Onita wasn't going to go over it, you know, because, again, Chono's such a top guy. And, you know, and this is his promotion. But at least, you know, he's willing to sell for Onita. And so it goes off a little better than the Sasaki match.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it was like a much better match. I mean, it was just a wild, crazy spectacle again, but like it was at least like entertaining. Like it was just fun to like watch just those two just, you know, bump into the barbed wire, just fireworks going off, and just, oh my god, it was just so absurd. And the entrances were, you know, unforgettable.
This is what we need to talk about. So The thing that this match may be known best for is the entrances, but it should also be noted that this was not a main event match by any stretch. In fact, this was the opening match of this Tokyo Dome show. So this is the very first thing that people were seeing, and as Wild Thing, you know, as the version of Wild Thing that Onita used as his theme hit, as he's coming down the ramp of the Tokyo Dome, he is getting pelted with garbage, which you do not see this anymore anywhere.
Yeah, the New Japan fans hated FMW fans. Like, there was, like, New Japan thought FMW, it's garbage, everything like that. You know, Onita, you're just a garbage wrestler. You're not a real wrestler. So, yeah, back then there was legitimate, like, we hate you kind of heat. So, and Onita embraced it. And that's what makes this entrance so great, is he embraces getting all this stuff thrown at him. You know, you're going to throw trash at me? Well, I'm going to sit here and smoke a cigarette while you do it.
Yeah, he gets hit at one point with, like, a cup of water or Coke or something.
Yeah,
and he just dumps it on his head, yes. So, now, mind you, it takes two to tango on this. So, we have to juxtapose this with Chono's entrance, in which he's rolling up in a military-grade Hummer at this way. So you can see this vehicle coming up the ramp at the Tokyo Dome, and then, you know, Chono's theme kicks in, and the crowd loses it. I mean, it's amazing. Now, I wish I could go more into Chono's theme. However, there's it has been discussed before, there's a racial slur in his theme. So I'm not gonna get praise it too hard, but the music itself is great, and the crowd reaction was unreal for this being an opening match at the Tokyo Dome. This was like a main event level pop in the opening match.
Yeah, and it was one of the top matches. I mean, it was one of the selling points. But they had to have it as the opening match just because it's going to take so long to set up the barbed wire and everything and then take it down. So, you know, those kind of matches either need to be the first match or the last match. And it wasn't going to be the last match, so that's right. Why they made it the first match.
Right. But I will say this, that this was by far much better than the match against Kensuke Sasaki. I should also know that there was a special guest on commentary during this match in Great Sasuke.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was on commentary for this.
Joined on this match, which is seems kind of random. Although I believe wasn't Sasuke one of the people in one of Onita's other retirement matches?
He was in a match. This was afterwards, though. This was 2003.
Oh, okay.
It was like a loser retire match, a loser's career over, and it was an exploding barbed wire match with Onita and Sasuke, and Onita lost, and because he was gonna focus on politics and everything like that, so it wasn't built as, oh, this is one of my retirements, but it's if I lose, I'm going to retire type match.
So it was a stipulation match. It wasn't a formal retirement. It was a stipulation.
And he was
match.
Gone. I mean, he disappeared for about a year or so after this. So he, you know, for all the jokes that Onita retires and everything, and you know, and they are deserved. He does, for the most part, usually take at least a year off or so after one of them.
Right. But I mean, this is what on Tuesday the 31st. This will be what his seventh retirement?
Yeah, it's the seventh. I had to look up because I was like, wait, I only count six. But apparently he retired one time without a match. So it was just, he just announced a retirement one time.
What a legend. What a legend.
Yeah, so, but I think this will be his his seventh retirement, his sixth, like, I'm promoting a match, or, here's a ceremony and all that.
Right. Well, and don't forget, he had his retirement from All Japan, too, which, pre-FMW, so.
Yeah.
But back to this match, I have some notes here. First of all, the crowd popping real hard when Chono tried to lock in his STF on Onita. But also, can we note that Onita was teasing Choshu by trying to do a Sasori Gatame, the Scorpion Deathlock, the sharpshooter, on Chono. Which was, I think there was a little bit of storytelling there. But then Chono breaks out of it with just an ankle lock. And I have a note here saying, why don't people do this more often? it seems like, if that could work. I also have a note here saying that the first time that Onita hits the wire. Now, Chono was the first one to hit the wire in this match. And that's why he kept his leather vest on. smartly. But the first time Onita hits the wire, I just have to say there was a nice smoke ring coming off of there. I don't know if anybody noticed that.
Those can be dangerous. I mean, one time a flaming fireball just came out of them one time and burnt Onita's arm, so they can be pretty dangerous sometimes.
Right, and the first time Onita hits it, you see his arm get sliced up. Now, I don't know if he did that on purpose or not.
Oh yeah, that was bad. Oh my
yeah,
God.
But
yeah,
then,
was,
but then
Chono, really bad call.
But then Chono starts punching that wound. I was like, ah! my sensibilities have changed quite a bit since I can't really deal with death matches as much as well as I used to. But,
yeah, that part made me cringe though. Like, he put an arm lock on him too. And I'm like, oh God! I'm like, it's like stretching the wound even more. I'm like, this is awful.
Yeah, and then Onita doing one of his signature moves, a headbutt to Chono, which in 2017 headbutts aren't really impressive anymore. In fact, they're pretty scary at this point, as we've seen, especially this year in New Japan with what happened with Katsuyori Shibata. But I also noticed that the third explosion had a ref grab spot that Toriano would be proud of, throwing. Who was the was it Tiger Hattori or Red Shoes in this match? I can't remember. I didn't make a note of that one.
I don't have it off the top of my head.
Yeah, it was one of those two. I know Red Shoes was involved in at least two of these matches, wearing a war shirt both times. But I also have one of my other notes is that they actually hit all four sides in this one. So all four of the explosive rigs got to go off in this match.
They're going to put the money into it. They're going to use them.
Yeah. Do you think they have to? Do you think that they have to decide? Pre-match. Okay, wait. We're going to hit this one first, and then.
I
think
go through, kind of walk through. Okay, you're going through this one the first time, then I'm going through this the second time, then we'll both go in it. I think, they definitely kind of plan where, they're going to hit and whatnot.
Yeah, and then, after they hit the fourth explosion, it was a double count out. Onita nearly got up, but then, theatrically.
Jeff, it was Red Shoes.
It was Red Shoes, okay.
I just went back into the video. Yeah, it was Red Shoes. And I believe this was the night, I think he took, that bump into, the barbed wire.
Yes, he was, he went into the barbed wire, too.
Insane. Like, Red Shoes, gets all the props in the world from me for that. That is, the most badass thing I've ever seen from a ref.
Yeah, he went into the wire and took part of the explosion too. So Onita nearly got up. But you know, theatrically fell at the 10 count, so double count out for this one. Like I said, this one definitely much better than the match with Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah, and it helped to it helped that Chono was more willing to give him more things and work with him and whatnot. Like I said, where the Sasaki thing, it's just, he doesn't like him, he does not want to work with him, and you could see, you know, you could see it through the match.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whose idea that was to put Sasaki with. I mean, I know why, but I mean, if it was going to be like this, I mean, surely somebody had to have known.
Yeah, well, I think it was because he was just building up the Choshu thing and whatnot, just so that, you know, here's Choshu's protege. So, hey, you know, it's not the main event. It's not, you know, we don't really need this to be good or whatnot. It just needs to kind of start the development of this is Onita, you know, in New Japan. That's what I'm going to guess.
Right. So, anyway, I'm just going to call it this may. In fact, you know, probably more due to the entrances. I mean, I think that they got everybody pumped, but this was, I thought this was a much more enjoyable match. I'm not going to give it a star rating because I don't typically do star ratings, but, you know, it was at least entertaining to watch.
Yeah, it served its purpose.
It did, and, you know, again, as a show opener, it definitely probably got the crowd pumped, you know, for the rest of Strong Style Symphony New Japan Spirit 1999, so. The third match that Onita took place in, it was a little bit more plain, you know, much like the, you know, there was no real gimmicks in this. This time, though, was a six-man tag match in which Onita actually teams with Chono and Akira Nogami, in the middle of the NWO Japan versus Team 2000 feud. They took on an NWO Japan team of Keiji Muto, Hiroshi Tenzan, and Hiro Saito. And this match was day 22 of the Summer Struggle 1999 tour on July the 21st, 1999, at the Nakajima Sports Center in Sapporo.
This is a really cool match.
Yeah, more or less a typical New Japan six man, and it was built up for what was to come, but I still think it's odd that, you know, Onita was teaming with Chono in this one, unless it was just a means to an end, pretty much.
Well, after the Chono match, they, you know, kind of embraced afterwards and kind of showed respect towards one another, and you know, they walked out together after the match.
That got cut off on the NJPW World one.
Yeah, so they show respect and all that. And then Onita comes out like a month later and joins up with Chono and Don Fry and NWO Sting and joins his group. And Chono was feuding a Muto at the time. So that's
right. That was the NWO versus Team 2000 feud.
Yeah. So
there was a split within there.
Yeah. So, and this is the last show for New Japan at the Nakajima Sports Center, which is a pretty famous building in Sapporo over like 50 years or so. So this is their last show at this building. And yeah, so this match is to pretty much set up for the next month or so with Onita against Muto.
Right. And again, I do have a note here that the crowd was definitely more receptive to Onita in Sapporo than they were in the Tokyo Dome. Now, I don't know if that's because of, you know, FMW, you know, running Sapporo more so than New Japan would.
Yeah, I mean, I think with New Japan at the Tokyo Dome, you're just getting the loyal, you know, you're just getting the New Japan fans and everything that are coming in. Whereas, you know, at the Nakajima Sports Center, you're getting wrestling fans and, you know, that are more embracive of all the different type of promotions. And so they're coming for this show and, you know, hey, they like Onita more than, you know, the fans at the Tokyo Dome for a New Japan show would.
Right, I mean, with, you know, Chono had a, you know, had a promo before the match, but then Onita at one point takes it and just starts, you know, barking into the mic, and the crowd's going nuts for it. You know, it was, so again, you know, it's a different crowd when you take him out of, it seems like if you take him out of Tokyo, it was a much different crowd in Sapporo, which, you know, we see that now in modern New Japan, especially the Osaka crowd is different from the Tokyo crowd. You know, we've talked about that before. So anyway, so we have this six-man match. And again, this was basically, it served its purpose as a setup match for what was to come in August. But I just have just a few matches, a few notes here. Like Onita circling the ring and tagging people in. You know, it was.
Oh
like,
yeah,
you know,
he was teasing everyone in this match. Like, yeah, it was classic Onita.
Yeah, I mean Onita. Yeah, I mean, eventually he would get engaged with folk, especially you know leading up to the final in which Onita missed Keiji Muto, which was a great touch, I thought.
Oh, I love that. That was awesome. Yeah, that was such a great. And then Akira, you know, hit him with the splash for the win. But
with Akira pinning Hiro Saito to end the match.
Oh man, can we talk about Muto though? Oh, good lord. Why did he not shave his hair at this point? Like, Jesus Christ.
Well,
I mean, like,
you know, like, brother,
his head was like bald as it was like at this point. It was like literally getting like Hulk Hogan like status at this point.
Yeah, in hindsight, I agree, but you know, at the time, it was what it was, and you know, he still had an image. He still had the image, especially since, you know, as we're going to find out, you know, he was still, you know, doing Muda too at that point. So he, so he kept the hair. Yeah, I agree, though. I mean, he probably would have been better served. And it would have been, you know, within the wrestling zeitgeist at that point, too, with, you know, the look being made famous by, you know, Steve Austin and Bill Goldberg at that point. But you know, it just was taking a few minutes to catch up to that, I guess.
It was awesome just to see Hiro Saito just basically do sentons and it just still be awesome.
Right? Yeah. I
like,
mean,
like
yeah,
Hiro Saito was just the
Hiro Saito
man.
Is
like,
somebody that we never talk about.
Match and I'll be totally fine with it. Just
yeah, yeah,
best senton ever.
Yeah, we don't talk about Hiro Saito enough. I don't think. I think he gets overshadowed as a member of you know Team Wolf and NWO. You know, compared to like Chono, Tenzan, and Muto. So, post match, Onita beats up the reporter backstage and then restates his either states or restates his challenge, for a match between you know between Great Muta and Onita's own parody character of Great Muta, the Great Nita. So, let's talk about Great Nita real quick. When did Onita start doing that? Was it 94, 95, I think?
It was 94. So, yeah, he just, him and Tarzan Goto came up with their alter egos pretty much together. Tarzan Goto being Ho Chi Wan and Onita coming up with the Great Nita gimmick. And so it got pretty over in FMW. So he kept using it and against Pogo. And then Pogo came up with his own alter gimmick. And so they're doing this. It led into, you know, in 95 or so, they're doing it for big shows and whatnot. And then Onita retired it right before his own retirement in FMW in 95, about 5 days before. He brought it back in FMW a couple times in 97. And then he brings it back here. And even though he had brought it back in 97, he kind of, I guess that was supposed to be forgotten. And so he's like bringing it back from the dead and has a coffin and everything. Like he's coming out from a coffin.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. I was dying. Laughing.
Yeah. He did. And of course, didn't he just also recently re-retire Great Nita?
Yeah. Yeah, so with his retirement coming up, he retired it back on August 27th, and this one, he walked it was at Shinkiba, first ring, and there's a little lake over there by Shinkiba within walking distance, so after the show, he pretty much just walked to it with the cameras following him, and he just walked into the water, and that's the last image you see of just Nita in the water, just, you know, waving to the camera goodbye.
So this leads to a possibly the most famous of Onita's matches in New Japan. This was a no rope explosive barbed wire barricade explosive landmine double hell death match, which that's a mouthful. Explain the double hell stipulation because I
Yeah, that's just that's just barbed wire around both sides of the ring is double hell. So, and then you know with the explosives and everything, and also this ring we go into it. The ring explodes as well, but not like how FMW kind of had mastered it.
Yeah, yeah, we will get into that. But this took place at NJPW Jingu Climax Battle of Last Summer. On August the 28th, 1999, at Tokyo Meiji Jingu Stadium. This is another one that I advise if you can seek out the any versions that are on Daily Motion or YouTube, because once again the entrances kind of help make this match. First with Great Nita. Coming out, even though it's still playing the wild, you know, Wild Thing is the entrance. In this case, though,
remix. It was a Nita remix Wild Thing song.
Oh snap! But with Great Nita spitting mist into the air and then wiping the remnants of it on his face, like doing it like a facial cleanse or something. I remember, my god! Yeah,
he's so good. Like he exaggerated like all of Muda's stuff, like, so perfectly, and, like, it was so great, like, just the way he moved around the ring and stuff, and just his facial expressions, are just, oh my god,
it is true. I mean, yeah, I mean, Great Nita was, you know, I don't know how many Great Muda parody characters there are or have been through the years. I think Great Nita probably was the best of them, because he actually did what you're supposed to do in a parody, which is take the movements and exaggerate, you know, the nuances and exaggerate them for comedic effect. You know, I don't think it was ever completely mean spirited. Maybe it was, but
I think he's just trying to kind of get, you know, the popularity of the Muda gimmick kind of for his own. So I don't think it was mean spirited, but it was just kind of capitalizing on it.
Well, yeah, for sure. I do want to point out that this is probably one of my favorite of the Great Muda entrance costumes, though. And it was interesting that this was still in the midst of, you know, the NWO era, and Muto being, you know, Keiji Muto was, I believe still the IWGP Heavyweight Champion at the time. But this was not the NWO version of Muda, and in fact, if you look on his pants, it actually says Moo 2000 on them. So this is like a different iteration of Great Muda, which we'd see later on too, as he got in his older years with the, you know, when he went to a mask instead of all makeup, he would change the mask with different iterations of the look of Muda.
Swear to God, Keiji Muto has more versions of himself than Street Fighter 2 has versions of itself.
you might be right on that point, brother. You might be right. And you know, one day we are going to do Keiji Muto's 2001 on this show.
it's like Muda Hyper Drive Speed Edition, Muto Turbo, Arcade Edition.
Hey, you know, can you really fault him though?
No, it worked. I know. I just like to goof on Muto. He's just
especially
easy.
In my presence. Yes,
he's the easiest target. Like, it's just, he makes it too easy. I love him though.
Well, once again, we had Muta taking the first explosion in this match.
Yeah, I don't know if the fans had like any idea how to take any of this. Like I think they were just very, very confused. The Tokyo fans, like, they just the no ropes on two sides, and just like it was just like bizarre for them. I think.
I mean, had Onita done this type of match before, Brett?
Oh yeah, yeah. He'd done it plenty of times at Kawasaki Stadium every year. You know, exploding barbed wire.
Right. But what I meant was with two sides of the ring not having the ropes, and there being, you know, landmines across, you know, on the outside.
He had done the landmines of Pogo early on. But as far as the two sides, probably not actually. I think this might have been the first time that he did the two sides. Just only.
I wonder what was the significance of taking two of the sides off then.
Just I think to get inside the ring, danger? To get inside the ring without, you know, exploding yourself to enter the ring and stuff. Maybe.
Yeah,
Right,
that's probably a
yeah.
good point. Because,
Yeah.
and plus, like, I guess it was like that inherent danger of, like, oh God, like, one of these guys could fall off and just get blown to smithereens, I guess. And it was just like, it was pretty nerve-wracking, I have to say.
Right, and so again, Muta takes the first explosion before he can even get his gear off, and that which was probably purposeful. Let's face it, because even though I know that Keiji Muta was not averse to bleeding, because I think we all know
Oh,
that
definitely not.
we know of the Muta scale of ranking blood in a match. But in any event, it would transpire that Great Nita would take the other two explosion spots. Now, that required two explosions on one side, so I guess I guess they had to rig two separate
Yeah,
circuits
they
of
started doing that.
explosions.
Yeah, they started doing that more often, where because I'm used to just seeing like, oh, one side, but like even lately, Onita will have an exploding barbed wire match where like, oh, like there'll be six explosions, and it's like, wait, what? So yeah, they definitely keep it rigged or whatnot, even after the first explosion of the barbed wire.
Right. And then let's talk about the ring explosion, which, this wasn't the same type of ring explosion that we've seen in, like, the Onita Terry Funk match or anything like that. But then
Yeah,
again,
there was.
this one was also, this was not outdoors either.
Yeah,
So
no, it
I.
was. It was.
Oh, it was. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. So this was an outdoor
Yeah,
match.
this is outdoor stadium.
Oh, my goodness. See, I didn't even catch that. Well,
But yeah,
then that.
there was no time, and that kind of screwed it up too. There was no time. Onita had kind of got, and FMW always did a timer going in, and so this one is just random. Here's an explosion, just boom.
Oh,
Right,
God.
I mean, you see Nita throwing a switch at one
Yeah.
point, and then it starts the countdown. But so yeah, so then yeah, the so then that's kind of odd then that the explosion wasn't what we'd seen at previously like Kawasaki Stadium or whatnot.
Yeah, there was no like 5, 4, 3. Yeah, just boom.
So in any event, so we did get the ring explosion, quote unquote, even though the ring didn't really explode, it was just pyro on the outside
Yeah.
of the ring going off. Onita would take another hit into the exploding barbed wire after that, and then the match resolution came with Muta pinning Nita after hitting Nita with Nita's own sickle that he brought into the ring.
Oh yeah, that thing was horrifying. I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't like very sh like sharpened at all, but like it just looked like just horrifying. I was like, why do you have a sickle, sir?
Well, so he could do the spot where he's playing with it, trying to do the around the world with it, like a yo-yo or something.
Oh yeah, that's safe. Yep. Oh my God,
But
what a mess, man.
after the match, Great Nita is at we see Nita attacking fans. They could have been plants for all I know, but as he's going to the back, he's attacking fans. Do you think do you if they weren't plants, do you attribute this more to, once again, the New Japan Tokyo fans not really liking
I would think these are
Onita?
plants or whatnot. If I don't think I've seen this part, but yeah, I would imagine that they're in on it, or they're
Yeah,
not letting him.
it's at the end of the NJPW World version. There, you see Nita going after some fans. So, but if you watch some of the other versions, post-match, you see the reporter trying to go to Great Muta, and all he says is, "Nita dead, Great Muta number one." Well, meanwhile, Great Nita has his mouth dribbling with blood. He kind of whines a little bit, makes a real this whining noise with his mouth, puts his head covering back on, and then lays back in the coffin. To
Oh my God.
re-symbolize, Great Nita is dead once again.
Oh goodness gracious. What a flair for the dramatic he has.
But he stayed dead for a good while, at least for this one. He stayed dead for a good 4 years here, so.
Was oh so did so Great Nita would come back in 2003 then.
Yeah, against Hase for World Japan.
Oh, so he would end up working with Choshu again then, in other
Yeah. Oh,
words.
yeah. He had a bunch of tag matches afterwards were pretty much the same result.
I just also want to point out that at the time that New Japan made a Great Nita figure. So I remember this, I tried buying it, I never could successfully do so. But New Japan made a Great Nita figure because of this match that came with accessories such as the sickle and a fireball.
Oh my God, I want this.
It's on eBay every so often. So if you ever just if you regularly check like Onita on eBay, it'll show up. It might be $75 or something like that, but you could get it.
So that was in August the 28th of 1999. It would be nearly a year before we hear from Onita in New Japan again. So, Brett, what was going on during this time? Like, why was there a year-long gap?
Well, at this point, there was no real purpose to him to continue with New Japan. He was running his own promotion and everything like that. But when Choshu announced, "I'm coming back," that's when, okay, now, I can have this match. Because he was never gonna, he got his matches with Muda and Shono and Sasuke or Sasaki, but what's the point? I'm not beating any of these guys. I'm kind of looking bad, but when Choshu came about and said, "I'm coming back, from retirement," that's when Onita was like, "Okay, I'm coming back to New Japan and I'm gonna work this match because this is the what I've always wanted."
Right. So at some point prior to the match, and if you watch this on NJPW World, you can see footage of Onita going to Choshu during like an NJPW workout session, and he hands a challenge to Choshu. Choshu talks to him but never accepts it. Somebody else grabs it, throws it back at Onita. Onita throws it back at him, and then Sasaki and other people just insult Onita, like saying "Get the hell out of here,"
Oh, Sasaki insulting Onita? That's not what a surprise.
Yeah, you're shocked, I can tell. But this would end up as an actual match at the NJPW Riki Choshu Revival Show on July the 30th of 2000 at Yokohama Arena. So this one doesn't even get a dome show.
But it sold out fast. I mean, they this
It did
was a
sell,
very
yes.
yeah, this was a big financial success for New Japan. They sold the
And
tickets pretty high, and it sold out way in advance. So they made good money off this show.
Right, and this was another no rope explosive barbed wire death match. All four sides of the ring were barbed wired and rigged for explosives. So this match happened. This was the main event of Riki Choshu's comeback show. No surprise that Onita takes absolutely every explosion in this match.
I don't think Riki Choshu took one move of offense. Like I'm like 99% sure. Like I don't recall him ever taking like one move of
I think
offense.
there was a scene, there was a sequence when Onita was on his knees and he was punching at Choshu. That was about it.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, some desperate punches
Yeah,
on the
that was
ground.
about it. And yet somehow Choshu managed to sell Onita more than Sasaki ever did. Despite this.
I know, like it somehow came off better. Like,
Right.
oh my! He absolutely clobbered Onita with a couple of those lariats. I mean,
Right.
like just
Yeah,
flat out
yeah,
laid
the
him out.
but I mean like Choshu was just like body he was like body slamming Onita into the wire just to set off the
Yeah, that
explosions.
was horrible. Oh my God, I thought like that was like just horrific. He just literally just threw him into the barbed wire. I mean, that was just
Right.
vile.
Well, at one point, Onita actually grabs the wire, which sets off an explosion to break a Sasori
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, that was so sick.
Yeah, which was a nice little callback to the match with Chono, because remember when Chono was trying to reach for the wire at one point, Reggie was like, "No, don't do that. You can't do that." So yeah, and then once again, Onita has that same arm opened up. Only this time, I don't think Choshu actually, punched the wound this time. as I recall. But I mean, you do see Choshu, because he's, you know, picking up and body slamming him. You do see blood all over Choshu in this match. So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, Choshu, I don't think ever once ended up on the ground in this match.
Oh no, not at all.
No, but so pretty much this match, Onita got paid a lot of money for this match, and it was pretty much that was what it was okay, we're going to give you thousands of dollars, but you are not going to get any offense in. So Onita pretty much had to, you know, take the, you know, ego hit to make, you know, to make a lot of money just to get destroyed, essentially.
Yeah, so, but
he was a treat.
He's something. Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, let's not forget, even Sasaki even fell out with Riki Choshu at one point. So
Riki Choshu was willing to like pay thousands of dollars just so he can go over like a complete like madman.
And so Onita used the money to become a senator with this money that he made.
Oh yeah, that's right. He did go into politics at, like,
yeah. So essentially, you know, Onita was willing to get destroyed to be able to become a senator.
Yeah, well, of course, we all know how that worked out in the end.
He
had a lot of fun, you know.
Well, that's certainly one way of putting it. I dare say maybe, yeah. Maybe in the current climate, maybe not the best choice of words, but yeah.
Was it like a staffer and like a prostitute, or it was like, or something like that? He was like having an affair with like two different people.
Yeah, what it was he was having one of the politicians also was a female, and then they got together and had an orgy.
Oh my god.
They all got together, yeah, and he was, yeah, so that ended up getting him kicked out and whatnot.
Yeah,
really? You don't say.
Yeah, right. Well, and probably rightly so, but what were any of his actual political accomplishments, though?
He did a lot as far as like trying to get he tried to help out Afghanistan a lot, actually, around this time period.
I do recall that he had like a charity pro wrestling event in Afghanistan with
He kind of tried to reach out for like Japan and other countries and stuff like that, like the poorer countries, trying to help them out. So that was kind of, I mean, I haven't really studied Onita's, you know, senator reign or whatnot, but I do know that was one of them. So I don't think he was actually bad at it until he kind of used his own ego.
Kind of abuses
his
position.
Power.
Yeah, abuses power. Yeah, yeah. Same story as it ever was.
Well,
it seems.
We all know politicians never do that. I mean,
right?
Not at all.
No, of course not. No, nobody in politics or entertainment ever abuse their positions of power ever. So. But to get back to this final match, honestly, despite the explosions, this was kind of a dull match. I mean, let's be honest. Now, do I put it? I do put it above the Sasaki match, but
yeah.
This was not anything to write home about. besides the explosions. Which, you know, hey, yeah, explosions. Yay,
like,
explosions.
The best parts of these matches, really, were just, like, Onita's just, like, crazy, like, entrances and just, like, the craziness, like, surrounding the event, if that makes sense. You know, like, it was just, like, really Onita's presence. It really wasn't about, like, what was going on in the matches.
Probably not, but I think this was, you know, New Japan's attempt to do... Because keep in mind, this was, you know, late 90s, you know, into 2000. And this is when, you know, both WWF, WCW, and we're all trying to, you know, have, like, their own little hardcore divisions and things like that. I guess maybe this was an opportunity for New Japan to do some of the same. You know, it just sticks out during a time period when, you know, this is also, you know, when Inoki was, you know, pushing his shooters, too. Yeah, we're also getting, you know, explosive barbed wire death matches.
And then New Japan brought in the Big Japan guys there for a short period of time, right?
That was like in 1997, and yeah, the Big Japan guys got completely washed
That was just to get in Big Japan's name out there. It was, you're going to come in, you're going to get destroyed, but hey, you get to have a Tokyo Dome match, so people, new eyes get to see your, you know, your guys get destroyed. And,
yeah, because I did recall that happening, and it's still really cool, though, like, that they actually did that. I find it pretty interesting that it kind of dabbled in that.
Trying something else. It's trying to see, okay, this is a popular, you know, it's kind of like the WWE with ECW where, okay, here's another popular product elsewhere. Let's see if we can, you know, use it and see if we can make the money and, you know, get popularity from it.
And also terrible examples, but we also on, like, we went over on one of the earlier episodes of this, the island death matches that they did in New Japan. That was, like, you know, even predating this stuff, and that was that was kind of their first foray into the wildness of that stuff.
Let's not go down that road again. it's funny though that, you know, the first of the island death matches, which is the completely unwatchable one between Inoki and Masa Saito, that was before FMW. But if you watch the second one between Hiroshi Hase and Tiger G Singh, you can definitely see like an FMW influence on that match. Brett, have you ever seen either of those matches?
No, not the New Japan ones. I've seen the FMW one though. But
there was an FMW Island Death Match.
Yeah, Onita did one with Tiger Jeet Singh, and it was an exploding barbed wire match. And it's not a good match by any means, but it's, you know, no one's there.
neither were these two. Let me tell you.
Yeah, yeah. It was, but it was a very good dramatic. It did its job, and it was very dramatic, and it got Onita over.
When was that one?
The Tiger Jeet Singh match.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, he took on Tiger Jeet Singh in, I think, the same island that the New Japan one was at. And
Ganrujima?
Yeah, and so he pretty much just puts Tiger Jeet Singh over to set up for his match at the Yokohama Stadium, like, 2 or 3 months later, but it's pretty much...
right, but what year was this, is what I'm asking?
92. This was 92.
This was... Okay, because the Hiroshi Hase versus Tiger Jeet Singh was in 91.
Yeah,
so that
this
was
right
before. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this was afterwards. Yeah, it was definitely taken.
That's
from
interesting.
Japan. Yeah, and then so Tiger Jeet Singh destroys Onita, and then like, and it's raining also during this match, and so Tiger Jeet Singh wins, takes off, and then like Onita, after being thrown into the exploding barbed wire, he's like on the ground and it's raining, and he's like putting his hand in the mud and everything, trying to get up. It's a pretty good like scene for, you know, being such a bad match.
Right. Well, that's pretty much what we came up with. That's what we decided too when we did the island death matches. Is that
it's good visuals?
The second one had some great visuals, but yeah, we're both of them were just horrible wrestling matches, especially the first one with Inoki and Saito, which went 2 hours.
legitimately like maybe the worst wrestling match of all time. Like I'm not even joking. Like that legitimately maybe the worst wrestling match ever put on.
So what can we say in the end about Atsushi Onita's time in New Japan? I mean, it was just kind of a wacky gimmick.
He made a lot of money. New Japan made a lot of money. He kind of had to take an ego hit here, you know. I mean, FMW was so Onita, I'm the guy, I'm, you know, everything's around me, you know, I'm the Hulk Hogan of, you know, this promotion. So for him to go, you know, to the, you know, the top promotion, he kind of had to take an ego hit because, hey, Chona wasn't going to put him over. Kinsuke Sasaki wasn't going to put him over. Muto wasn't going to put him over. You know, he didn't, you know, Choshu, obviously. But, you know, so he wasn't actually going to get his wins that what he was used to, but he was going to make a lot of money in return and have his dream matches and get his name out there and whatnot. So, you know, he pretty much, you know, had to sacrifice his ego to make a lot of money, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, Onita knew, like, the money equals the power anyway. And, like, he knew it taking that little hit, short hit, was going to just help him out in the long run anyway, because he was just going to get richer and richer and richer, and he's just, you know, filthy, you know, rich now, so.
He's so rich he can afford to go to New Jersey now. It's amazing. All right. Well, in the end, they were kind of blips on the horizon of the larger New Japan in the late 90s and the 2000s, but they were if not good matches, but definitely some interesting times, which sometimes, you know, if you look at modern New Japan, maybe, you know, modern New Japan could stand and take a couple of more risks. But in the end, all we could say is I wish Onita well in his retirement. Our producer today is Chris Damasceno. Brett, let's go to what are you up to besides, you know, guesting on this show? What else are you working on?
I've been working on a History of FMW podcast that comes out every other week, where I just pretty much get questions asked and go into detail pretty much year by year of everything that was going on in FMW at the time. And I just work on my website, Bahu's FMW World, at fmwwrestling.us. And I pretty much am covering everything in regards to Onita, the new FMW promotion, and Freedom's promotion.
Now, is there a connection between Freedoms and FMW, or is it just because they're the New Jack Deathmatch promotion in town?
It's linear. FMW closed, which then created another promotion, which then, when they closed, this created another promotion, which then closed, which created Freedoms.
Oh, so okay, I got you.
Yeah, there's a linear to it, but
I got you.
Yeah.
So do you cover Big Japan at all, or is that too mainstream for you at this point?
I write the results. I cover the results and everything, but I don't really write about what's going on too much. But I have every result on Big Japan on my site.
Understood. And where can we find the History of FMW podcast that you do?
It's on iTunes, and it's also on YouTube. Just search History of FMW, and we're right now into 1991, so we just kind of, we're about 5 episodes in, and we plan on covering the whole 90s and up into the early 2000s until FMW closed down. So every couple weeks or so, we'll be posting a new one.
And where can we find you on social media?
Bahu FMW on Twitter, and Bahu FMW World on Instagram, where about every 4 days or so I post about 15 random pictures of FMW from all the magazines I've collected over the years.
It certainly sounds like this is still quite the labor of love for you, and that you keep going after, you know, beginning. What was the first year of your website, like 97 or so?
Yeah, 98. Yeah, 98. So I started 98. I love it, and you know, I feel like when you know you love something, you want to share it as much as possible. So even if if one person's following, that's all I really care about. As long as as long as I'm getting possible attention to something I love, it's worth doing it for me.
All right, Lawrence, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter. It's still LOB_3. I'm not doing a whole lot else, but so, besides the show, I'm just kind of tweeting my takes as I watch stuff very slowly, very slowly these days. I'm kind of slowed myself down on the wrestling a little bit, but, I still watch when I can. So yeah, obviously New Japan stuff. I try to keep up with on now with our show, but, Brett's site is awesome. it's the coolest, like really coolest site. I remember reading that place like back when I was younger, like wrestling fan. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. This dude went to Japan and like met like Hayabusa and stuff. That's really cool. I was like, wow. And so yeah, it's really cool to see like you're still doing everything. That's awesome, dude.
Thanks.
And, of course, you could find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And you are listening to this through Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. In the next 2 weeks, in about 2 weeks, we should have a new episode of Strong Style Story, which will cover the Power Struggle shows. Probably get into Lionsgate Project 9 and the forthcoming World Tag League. Once again, I would just like to extend all the thanks in the world to Brett, Bahu FMW, for taking the time to discuss this this topic with us today. Brett, thanks a lot, and please come back in. If we could find another topic that you would be able to add some expertise to, we'd love to have you back sometime.
You gonna do a J-Cup 94 topic one day?
Oh hell yeah!
Eventually we will. We definitely will. So I was actually thinking about that. We can bring you back for that one. I think eventually we are gonna get to that. But you know, sometimes we also try to cover like the not so obvious topics too. So you know, but yeah, I'm sure eventually we're gonna hit J-Cup 94. So anyway, this has been episode 9 of Strong Style History. Thanks a lot for listening. Please listen to this and other fine podcasts on the Place to Be Nation Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. Until then, on behalf of Brett Corner, Lawrence O'Brien, I am Jeffrey Wessel. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Goodbye.